Have you ever considered a role in administration? What types of people are good for these roles and which are not? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast. Before we get started, a word from our sponsor, Advice Media. Make no mistake, digital marketing is a science. Advice Media has created a proven roadmap that gets you from where your practice is now to where you want to be. We call this our pyramid of success. Thousands of clients have proven that our six-stage approach is the optimal way for attracting new patients and retaining current ones. We get it. You're busy and don't have the time to be a digital marketing expert. You have lives to change. Give us just 30 minutes to consult with you. We would bet you are doing some things really, really well. And there might be areas where you can improve. That's where we come in. Just for spending the time, we will give you a $60 Amazon gift card. You have nothing to lose. Book your consult today. Go to drpodcastnetwork.com/advicemedia. That's drpodcastnetwork.com/advicemedia.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome back to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, thank you so much. For my new listeners, welcome. Because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Today, we have Dr. Nate Link. Nate is the Chief Medical Officer for Bellevue Hospital since 2012. He received an MPH in Health Policy and Management at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. Dr. Link served as Chief of Bellevue Medical Clinics from 1986 to 2001, and Chief of the Medicine Service from 2001 to 2012. Dr. Link's responsibilities have included oversight of quality and safety across the continuum of care, co-executive sponsorship of lean-based value streams in patient flow and patient experience, several stints per year as inpatient ward attending, and conduct of a variety of inpatient and outpatient teaching conferences. He was co-chief editor of the Bellevue Guide to Outpatient Medicine, winner of the American Medical Writers Association Award as Book of the Year for Physicians in 2001. His research and educational interests include evidence-based medicine, patient safety, and the use of information systems to promote effective clinical care. He is the author of The Ailing Nation, Lessons from the Bedside for America's Leaders. Well, I know I'm excited, so let's get Dr. Link onto the show. Dr. Nate Link, welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. I've pre-recorded a little bit about you, but in your own words, could you tell the listeners kind of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm an internal medicine physician. I trained at Bellevue Hospital in New York City. I've worked there ever since. That's now almost 40 years of a career. Bellevue is the oldest public hospital in our nation. It's 300 years old. And I have worked my way up the ladder of leadership. I'm currently the chief medical officer of the hospital.
Wow, that's amazing. Not many people stay where they trained or even stay at their first job these days. So that's a lot.
That's true. But Bellevue has always been a magnet for me. I never achieved escape velocity to escape orbit here. It's a wonderful place to work, and I've learned so much there.
That's great. Well, Nate, could you perhaps just take us through kind of the progression or the trajectory of your career from when you graduated residency, you know, up till today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So as I said, I came to New York in 1983 as an intern in internal medicine. The NYU School of Medicine Bellevue program was the residency. And I did my 3 years, and then I stayed on as an attending. Very early on as an attending, I knew that I wanted to explore the path of leadership. It was always an interest of mine, actually, even in medical school. So right off the bat, about a year out, I took a position as the director of the primary care clinic, which was a small enterprise within the hospital at the time. And it was a good start for me. And then over the years, I continued my practice. I was initially an outpatient physician and then became an inpatient physician. And along the way, I grew in my role. I became the chief of all the medical clinics, and then I became the director of all of ambulatory care at Bellevue by 2000. And then in 2001, I became the chief of the medicine service, so the Department of Medicine at Bellevue, and I did that job for about 12 years. And then in 2012, I became the chief medical officer of the hospital, and I've been doing that ever since.
Wow. You've certainly worn a lot of hats over the course of your career. But it seems like you've had a steady progression in increasing amounts of leadership as you progress. You went from a small position to a bigger and bigger and bigger position, which seems like the correct way to do it. So that's great. I talk to a lot of docs nowadays, and some people, when they're presented with alternatives to non-clinical careers, administrative work comes up, and I don't really agree with that. I have administrative interests myself, but I think you need at least a foot in the water of clinical medicine to understand how to lead people within that field. So, do you think administrative work is a viable non-clinical career as for people that are just sick of medicine?
Well, certainly in a healthcare organization, I think it's crucial for physician leaders to be continuing to practice. And I've never stopped practicing even to this day. I mean, literally last month, I did my most recent 2-week stint as an inpatient hospitalist. I think it gives you credibility to other physicians who you're leading. I think it helps inform your work. It's really helpful when I'm in an administrative meeting, talking to non-physicians to say, hey, just last month, this is what I saw. This is a problem we haven't solved, and here's a story about it. So I actually am of the mind that the whole point of having a physician leader is that they continue to be engaged in clinical work. Now, the truth is, I spend most of my time in administration. Most of my days are spent, in meetings or planning sessions and whatnot. And I don't do as much clinical work as I used to, but I never gave it up. And I think even physicians who are running hospitals, it's really important to stay engaged.
Yeah, I agree completely. So, the next thing I want to talk about, physician leadership in general, I feel like there is a bit more of a movement these days towards physicians taking leadership roles, whereas once there wasn't, there was less people interested, I feel. But they're starting, you see a lot of hospitals that are run by non-physicians, which is fine. But I think as we get into an era of increasing physician leadership and at least increased interest, what do you think makes a good physician leader?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the starting point is you need to be a good physician. And I find a lot of the attributes of leadership, which, I write about in my book, comes from the physician side of things. Using evidence to make decisions. I always say in a meeting, like, why are we treating? We don't even have a diagnosis yet. And I'm talking to administrators. But sure. This the concept of, carefully perusing a situation, gathering all your facts, assessing before you make a decision about a plan of action is core to a physician. And it's necessary to be a leader. So much of what physicians do is really directly applicable to leadership. And I think that's a starting point. I think physicians actually, if they're interested in leadership and tolerant of administrative tasks, and not all physicians are, frankly, but if you are, you can make a great leader. And I think hospitals benefit when physicians are in the room where all the important decisions are made. I've seen that over time and again. But I don't mean to cast any doubt on the effectiveness of non-physician leaders. I think we form a team. We form a team of leaders. We work well together. And I think Bellevue gets the best of both sides.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, physicians are leaders by virtue of their training, right? We learn how to lead multidisciplinary teams. We learn how to interact with junior learners. We learn how to, all throughout the course of our learning. But I agree with your point that some people are not tolerant of administrative work, and that's A-OK. you know, the interesting thing I found too is that when you make interest known to the non-physician administration that you have interest in leadership and getting involved, most of them are very welcoming. Because you don't have a lot of docs that come up and say, "Hey, I want to be at the meetings." Have you found that? That
is so true. I think you just nailed it. And I give this advice to young physicians who are interested in leadership. I'll say, if you show an interest in this and a talent for it, and that means, you know, you have to be engaged in process. And some physicians are impatient with process. You know, they just want to get to results. But true leadership requires process and engagement and working through problems systematically. And if you have a patience for that and an interest, and you can show an ability to get from point A to point B, that is, you can close out a project, you know, get to the end point, you will become instantly of great value and interest to people around you. And hospital leaders are always looking for physicians willing to engage in leadership projects. And I think it's actually relatively easy to climb a ladder of leadership if in every position you're in, you just do good work and produce results. Because the fact that you're a physician gives you an edge, honestly, in the leadership ladder. And there's really good opportunities for physicians.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the traditional teaching was join a bunch of committees and try to be chair of that committee. And then hopefully you'll get noticed someday. But for people I talk to, I just, you know, when I started 2 years ago at my current hospital, I had a meeting with the CEO and said, "Hey, how can I help?" And, you know, 6 months later, I had an urgent care directorship. So
there you go.
the opportunities come for those who seek them out.
That's absolutely true. There's a physician in our hospital in the Department of Medicine who recently took on a big project to create some visual aid tools for inpatient rounds. Mm. And it was literally working with IT to program kind of a spreadsheet, a visual display of updated information about each patient. And so when physicians are rounding on a unit, they call it up on a screen. You're there with your social worker, your nurse, your case manager. You're all discussing a case and a disposition of a patient. And there is all this information you need. This guy developed this like over the course of a year, and he was just doggedly persistent and produced this amazing result that has transformed care. And he's now, you know, going to be the chief of inpatient medicine because people saw the potential in someone who could pull off a project like that. And I think that's often how physicians ascend the ladder of leadership, is just by successful projects.
Yeah. And being, you know, generally likable helps.
For sure. Yeah, and there's three other pieces. It's being respectful, engaging, careful in your work, and dotting your I's and crossing your T's. But the most important thing is getting to the finish line. It's easy to get daunted in a hospital by obstacles that get in the way of success in projects and whatnot. And the best, the most successful physicians I've seen are the ones who have that persistence not to give up and just keep knocking on doors till one opens up. They're the ones who wind up with a success.
Fair enough. Who do you think, what kind of physicians should not go into leadership?
Well, I think physicians who don't like meetings, who don't respect non-physicians. If you're not ego checked, you know, if you're kind of full of yourself, and you see a hierarchy where physicians rule over nurses and housekeepers and administrators are your lackeys, you know, who are supposed to make sure the room is clean and the lights come on, you're not going to succeed. You're going to create friction right from the get-go, and you're not going to be effective. Really, you have to win people over, and you have to engage with them in a respectful way and see them as your partners. I think physicians who can find nurse leaders as good teammates or finance people as respected partners in a planning exercise, the people pick that up. They appreciate if you respect them. They'll know right off the bat whether you're condescending, and you will not get very far. You'll be disruptive, and you'll definitely fail. So I think it's kind of the basic demeanor that's probably more important than anything in a success.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, the nurses will know right away. And once you lose the nurses, you're out, right? that's fair. So how about, let's talk about some advice for the new leader. Let's say you did all the things we just talked about, and you were offered perhaps a small or medium-sized leadership position. And this is your first kind of foray into leadership. So what kind of tips and advice would you give for the brand new leader, physician leader?
Well, this is advice I would give to any level leader. I define as a leader. A leader is someone who takes other people to a new place. And that's different than a manager, right? A manager can keep things in place running, makes the trains run on time, but you don't really get anywhere new. Hospitals are constantly changing. The hospital and the healthcare industry, it's constant reinventing itself. And so getting to a new and better place is always, on the agenda. And there are really three essential attributes of someone who takes people to a new place. First, they have to have vision. They have to know where that place is. I have to have an idea of this thing that I'm in charge of what I want it to become. And I have to be able to enunciate that and understand that. And then the second attribute is being able to get there. And that's about strategy. What is the route to get this entity that I am leading into this new place? And that's a different skill set, really. It's about problem solving and decision making. And then finally, and equally important, is I have to take the people there. I've got a new place to find. I know how to get there, but I got to bring everybody with me. And that's interpersonal skills. It's motivation and persuasion and all of that. And if you have one and not the other two, you're not going to get anywhere. Even a small thing like a clinic or a specialty clinic, where if you're running a little program, it seems small. You got to be thinking about, like, where am I trying to take this? What is my plan to make it better and safer and higher quality, better for patients? I have to be able to do that, and then I have to get us there. If you think like that, even as a fledgling leader, you're going to have some early success. You're going to turn heads. You're going to catch attention because you took something and made it better. So my first advice to a young leader is take that thing that's been handed to you and make it better. If your job is literally to schedule, all the house staff or all the attendings, you're the scheduler. That's a project. Can you make that work better than it ever has before? If your job is to, set up the conferences, think to yourself, how can I make this more than just a scheduling exercise? How can I improve these conferences? How can I make the product and the outcome better than it's ever been before? When you achieve change, you are seen as transformative, no matter how small the task may seem. And honestly, it's your open door to growth and leadership. You'll also know very quickly whether you're suited for it, because some people are annoyed by the tasks, to get to a new place. And others are, emboldened and empowered by the feeling of movement and transformation and growth.
Wow, that was great. I took some notes. That's wonderful. that's a very great answer to my short question. So moving along here, if you're willing, would you be able to take us kind of through what a day in the life looks like? I don't have to get super specific, but just kind of what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. Well, so as chief medical officer, I'm responsible, generally speaking, for all the quality and safety of care in the hospital. And so the way Bellevue is set up, we have 22 clinical departments, each with its service chief. So there's a physician in charge of each department, like surgery, medicine, psychiatry, plastic surgery, every specialty as well. And those folks are accountable to me. And I think my primary job is supporting the chiefs in their work. So a lot of what I'm doing every day is helping them solve problems. And, they'll come to me, just last week, our chief of the cancer center said to me, we're running out of space for chemotherapy. We can't fit our patients. We don't have enough physical space. We don't have enough slots and nurses, and we now have a waiting list to start chemo for people diagnosed with cancer. And we all agree that's terrible. So that's now landed on my plate. And my job would be to help her solve that problem. And I'm going to be pulling in these other departments, the facilities people, because there's space issues, nursing, outpatient administration, because this is done in their space, and the physicians involved in the care. And it's going to be a complicated solution. You know, I'm not sure where the space will come that's suitable for this work. I know we need more trained nurses to deliver the chemotherapy. We're going to talk about extending into the evening or on weekends. We're going to talk about entirely new space to support them. And these are complicated questions. So a lot of my day, honestly, is spent organizing processes like these, having meetings where I pull people together. Lately, they've been WebEx meetings, but honestly, I hope to get back to face-to-face meetings. But my job is to drive that forward. I know I got to get a solution. So it's going to be, let's first figure out what is the problem and let's do a differential diagnosis. You know, like, how did we get here? And then it's like a treatment plan. Let's explore options and let's pick the most suitable option for problem solving. And this, I'm going to draw in finance even. You know, we're going to be trying to figure out if there's a cost to what we're doing, how we're going to pay for it. And what I love about my job is everything's new and fresh. The problems come up every day. And I'm spending a lot of time organizing different parties to pull them together and coalesce around a solution. So if you're talking about like, how does my day go? You know, I have some canned meetings that are just, you know, every day or every week done a certain way. We have budget meeting where we talk about the staffing of the hospital and how we're paying for any changes that are going on. These are standard scheduled meetings. We have quality meetings, safety meetings. We're reviewing data, you know, with team members. A lot of it is meetings. I always think of, you know, a good meeting is where you're not just talking about something, but you're getting somewhere. And so you're making decisions. You come out of the meeting with decisions being made by the people present, and you've taken that incremental step toward a goal. I may pop into the CEO's office and we'll have hot topics of the day. He's my boss, the chief executive officer. And we work in a system. So Bellevue is one of 11 hospitals in a large public hospital system of New York City called Health and Hospitals. And so we have higher level leaders that we report to in the central office, and we relate to them a lot. We have meetings or conversations with them. So a lot of it is about interaction, and the schedule is different every day because there are different problems we're solving every week. But some of it is the same because, you know, it's a standardized format for addressing issues that are, you know, ongoing. But a lot of it is one-offs, which I think I enjoy the most about the job, because I love, it's like getting a new patient. You know, you're kind of unwrapping a present, right, that came from the emergency department, and you're trying to figure out what's wrong here and then how I'm going to solve this problem. It's very similar, it feels to me, like being a doctor. But it's now, you know, administrative stuff.
Sure. But, you know, I've said it before on the show, is if for those who are interested in leadership, you know, even if you're trading some of your clinical time for administrative time, oftentimes you can affect many more patients on a global scale. So, you know, I think that's the other side of it as well. You can have a bigger impact on the individual patient.
You touched on the exact reason why I got into leadership. There's a wonderful feeling when you feel like you have the clout to impact thousands of patients. And if you can help solve a problem or design a process that changes things forever for many, many patients, and you can see the impact of your work, is incredible. It's an endorphin rush. You can literally walk into a unit that you set up that never existed before, that's doing something really good, and you say, hey, this is the product of my work, and this wouldn't have happened without me. And that is probably the reason physicians go into leadership, is to get that feeling of success.
Yeah, I agree. No, that's wonderful. I love that. You mentioned it in passing, but could you tell us about your book?
Oh, sure. Yes, thank you. So my book is called The Ailing Nation. Lessons from the Bedside for America's Leaders. So this is a real extension of what we've just been talking about. I, in my clinical and administrative career, have witnessed a remarkable evolution, advancement in standards in hospitals, in healthcare, in leadership, and in clinical care of patients. It's been transformative improvements that are across the board. And as I said, it's about how we use evidence to make decisions. It's how we handle mistakes to make ourselves better. It's how we treat our staff, how we treat our patients. It's led to a concept called the just culture, which we can talk about. But it's an impressive advancement that I've seen. And but in recent years, when I look across the divide at our political world, it seems there's a big gap. They're really behind. The our national leadership culture is way behind our healthcare landscape in terms of all of these topics. So I decided to write a book about it. And what I did was each chapter of my book starts with stories of Bellevue patients or leadership challenges that leads to a lesson, a leadership lesson. And then I try to apply that, you know, to the to our national leaders as a kind of a lesson from my world to theirs. Quite frankly, the healthcare industry has benefited from learning from other industries. Like the aviation industry taught us a lot about safety, and the hotel industry taught us a lot about service. And the automobile industry taught us about efficiency and design and production. We have used tools from across the divide from all these other industries to help us better. And I'm just trying to pay it forward here, because honestly, I think our political leaders are behind all the rest. And, you know, I'm just trying to, like I said, pay it forward.
Oh, that's great. I will put a link in the show notes for the listeners. That sounds like a great read. I'll be picking it up myself. Other than your book, do you have any like leadership books or recommended resources for people that are interested in learning about this stuff?
Well, one of my favorite leadership books is called Good to Great by Jim Collins. It was written about 20 years ago. He wrote about the business world. He wrote about what he basically did in his book was he identified corporations that had succeeded over a period of time, had created success, had grown, and had sort of conquered their fields, and contrasted them with similar organizations that started at the same time and failed. And he collected a lot of information. This is truly evidence-based. But he went into the successful organizations and looked at all their attributes and interviewed staff and, you know, took all these notes. And then he went to the failed ones. And then he compared across all kinds of attributes of leadership to see what was associated with success. And I'll just give you one example from the book that I thought was really interesting. But the book is a good read because it's evidence-based and very logical. And he's really trying to point out what is the key to success in leadership. But one of the interesting things he found was that the best leader, the leaders of the successful organizations, were not what you thought they would be. They were not these high-profile, powerful, transformative individuals who typically have big egos and are very outward-facing, promotional types who, you know, have these big transformative goals. They were much more commonly kind of quiet, self-effacing types who were ego-checked, many of whom had grown up in the organization and were not high-profile. They were more behind the scenes. But the organization came first for them. They were true advocates of the organization. They achieved improvements by incremental steps, not by big, splashy, you know, promotional campaigns. They were inward-facing and self-effacing, right? They were not a big on, they did not have big egos, or they were not narcissistic. They were much more successful. And it helped me appreciate one of these aspects of leader that I think is very important, which is your demeanor. It's important to be humble as a leader. You're more likely to listen. You're more likely to, you know, have an open mind, an open heart. You're probably going to be more compassionate to your staff. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that works better. But I love this book because every chapter had a different topic. And in each topic, it was an evidence-based review of what makes good leaders.
Wonderful. Yeah, that sounds like a great read. I'll add that to my ever-growing list. Well, we're running out of time here, Nate, but you've given us a lot of great advice. But if you could just give a single piece of advice to the early career physician, really on any topic, what would that be?
Well, I think you need to always be focused on the basics. In the end, people are successful, especially in leadership. You know, they're good people. They have the right motivations. They have good hearts. They put others first. They're respectful. They're goal oriented, but they realize the goals are those of the organization. Even if you feel ambitious, I think you're going to be most successful in leadership if you're putting others first. People will recognize that in you, and you will, I think you'll climb the ladder faster if people know that you're there for them and not for you. So I think that would be my most important piece of advice.
That's a great one. That's great. And if people are interested in learning more about you or getting to connect, where can they find you?
Well, I would say read my book because I lay it all out there. My book's available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, but it's I really share a lot of the inside of me in the chapters of this book. So that's a good way to get to know me.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for all of the value you provided on this show. I personally learned a lot, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks, Andrew. I really appreciate spending the time with me.
One last thing before we go. Remember Advice Media? Don't forget to schedule a consult with them to receive a $60 gift card and strategic insight on what your current digital marketing is doing or not doing for you. Contact Advice Media at drpodcastnetwork.com/advicemedia. Again, that's drpodcastnetwork.com/advicemedia. What a fantastic show with Dr. Nate Link. I really appreciated his years of experience and insight. He made some great points about who should and who should not pursue a career in administration, practical tips to get started, and much more. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell at least three of your friends and colleagues. It really helps to get the word out there. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is go to my website at andrewtisserdo.com. That's andrewtisserdo.com/video. where you can find a free 4-part series where I discuss my transition from burnout as a medical student through residency into early attendinghood and what I did about it, along with practical career strategy tips embedded in each video. Remember, you can reach out to me at any time, and if you need some more direct help, book a call with me at andrewtisserdo.com/SS for a free strategy session where we can discuss some practical steps to help you get unstuck and have more satisfaction with your career. All right, that's all I have for today. So remember, keep talking. All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.